Audience question. Were you in Iraq during sanctions? And if not, what brought you back to Iraq?
Actually, I was in Iraq until 1993. And the reason that I left is that because under economic sanctions, I could not feed my child anymore. I was working as an architect, and my husband was an architect, but he was taken, recruited to the army. And we reached to the point where buying milk for our newly born child was a burden on us. So we had to think of, and for him to be recruited every other year to a new war happening on Iraq was like, you know, a miserable life. So we had to leave, and believe me, those economic sanctions did not make the government weaker, did not make Saddam weaker. It only made us rendered helpless into creating our political underground resistance to Saddam. So that policy was against the people of Iraq. It was not against the government. It was not the right thing to do. And that was the reason why I left there. I left in 93 and went back in 2003. It took me a few years to reach to Canada and a few years to recover, a couple of years to understand that I am a woman who has suffered there, and if there is the opportunity, I should go back and create a better reality. And this is one thing I like to say to all the students here, is that having a good education, having the skills that you have, you should put them in a good cause. I have set up these women's shelters. I have a newspaper for women that says no to compulsory veil, no to oppression, and no to inferiority. And we have had already 8 issues out there, and we have a big base of women activists in Iraq. Putting in your education to a good cause is a very good thing to do. I know that in this part of the world, maybe you have to make money, but there are good causes to pursue also in life.
Question. What do you think will happen once the U.S. occupation is out of Iraq? I would be worried that the Islamist extremists would come into Iraq. What could you do to create a more stable government?
Very good question. We have been faced with it at many points, that if the U.S. troops leave immediately, we've had these political Islam groups coming from all over the world into Iraq, fighting their jihad war against the American enemy, and we are going as victims to it. So if the U.S. troops leave, maybe they take over and it's another Taliban in Iraq. That fear exists. But then again, if the U.S. troops leave, there will need to be peacekeeping forces of multinational nationalities to keep the peace in Iraq. But the condition is that they cannot impose any political formula on the people of Iraq. The people of Iraq have to decide what is to be done. When once there is this forced political formula and that favors the ethnic, the religious, and leaves aside the progressive and marginalizes them, that is not acceptable. So whoever it is that has not pointed the gun at Iraqis at any point, we prefer those to be the peacekeeping forces. Because, you know, once you bombed and killed 100,000, more than 120,000 people, you should not be staying in there and telling us how to run our lives. And when we say immediate ending of occupation, we know that it will be dragged along to take a minimum of 5 to 6 months. It will not happen right away because Yanar says so.
Question. If the U.S. had not attacked Iraq, would Saddam Hussein still be in power?
Yeah, so many people use that idea to justify the war, and I take it in goodwill here, that Saddam Hussein was a bloody dictator. He has killed so many Iraqis, and it was hard for us to get rid of him. But the worst thing to do was to impose economic sanctions that made us weak in resisting Saddam. You know how many attempts of coup, of assassination were made against Saddam during these long decades that he ruled? But the economic sanctions made us helpless and made whoever had the ability of setting up a political situation leave the country. Most of us worked in exile. The alternative was lift the economic sanctions, support the people of Iraq, let them organize and topple him, but the change comes from within, not from the top, with bombing airplanes and with all the mass killing that happened. Saddam is still alive, right? And the so-called resistance, which we think of as criminals, the so-called resistance are still working to put him back in power. So that's another issue that I would like to address. The resistance who are killing Iraqis more than they are killing U.S. troops are not for the Iraqis. Some of them are Baathists, some of them political Islam. They are totally against the Iraqis. But the U.S. policies should have been oriented towards supporting the people and not attacking us and making us. You know, we have lost hope. The people inside Iraq, most of them, I'm speaking about 80%, live what we call a dark scenario. Whenever you get rid of one sort of evil, another kind of evil comes up. For example, unemployment, you have no income, you cannot survive for the day, you and your children. If that is solved, you have political Islam doing this terrorism against you. If that is solved, we have U.S. troops making these mass killings in Fallujah or in Mosul. If that, it's a very dark scenario. This should not have been the solution. Most freedom-loving groups around the world said that this war will be killing at least 250,000 Iraqis. And we're halfway now. And it's still in the beginning.
How are you organizing the women's movement in Iraq? Is it above ground or underground?
We know that it's a dark scenario, but we try to turn it into a bright scenario by organizing the women and looking at it as an opportunity to have our vision realized in Iraq. Many of the areas where we go and speak to people, especially to the women, they tell us, what equality? What are you speaking about? You know, if I'm one of those people who wants to understand reality, analyze it, but not change it, I would not do anything. But we sit down with those women, we speak to them about self-esteem and how it should be theirs, that they are equal to the husband does not have the right to raise a hand at her. All of that we do. We started in the internally displaced complexes, people who were internally displaced. We were distributing humanitarian aid in these places. And after we finished distribution, you know how people become grateful to you because you're helping them? They tell us, what do you want from us? We tell them, in this area, no woman should be beaten up, polygamy should not happen, it's inhumane, and whichever woman has some complaints, they should come to us, and we will talk to their husbands. And we found out that it doesn't work only on the women's front. We got some progressive political supporters that sit down with the men and speak to them and make it a reality. That women's equality is the most wonderful thing to have. You will have a better house, you will have a better marriage, and a better situation. That's how we started, but it didn't stop there. We started among women, working class women, working in factories. We started now, we are working among university students, which has encouraged the uprising in the city of Basra. And the means of our work is organizing first. Women's centers that have been a source of a woman-friendly culture. And third is our newspaper. It's called Al Musawat, which means equality. And I have some copies I could show you later on. We are very open to our slogans. No to compulsory veil, no to inferiority of women, and yes to an egalitarian secular constitution. It has stormed all over Iraq in the beginning, and there were all sorts of accusations that we are bringing Western concepts to Iraq, alien concepts. When this has happened in Iraq 50 years ago, with the influence of the progressive groups. So the means of our work are three. Organizing the women in workplaces, educational facilities. And the second is our women's centers we have once a week, we have this casual gathering of speaking to whoever wants to be friend to women and to be an activist for women. Many men show up, you wouldn't believe. Intellectuals, writers, journalists, and lately artists and producers, directors, they say they want to be part of our group. And the third one is the literature, feminist literature. Our literature is very outspoken, and we have learned a new trick. I go again to the students here. If you have some capabilities, put them to a good cause. I appear over the TV almost 3 times a week, speaking about women's rights. Sometimes it's a political debate, sometimes it's an interview that's half an hour long, sometimes it's with men that are very angry at me, and they call me bad words. So imagine doing that 3 times a week over a few months. What happens to the culture of the place towards women? You know, the question comes up continuously. What is this woman speaking about? Why does she connect it with the veil? What does she mean, freedoms of women? Is she promoting promiscuity, or is it about law and constitution and political situation? So it became an issue. And after 2 years of work, we notice a big change. And now it's not only NR. Now, I wouldn't be exaggerating if I say we have 25 very outspoken women activists in Iraq, in Baghdad, in Basra, in Kirkuk, in Erbil, a few in Sulaymaniyah, because we don't need them very much there. So it's growing, it's working. This progressive feminism should change the world. We are starting from Baghdad, but we still need your support, okay?
Thank you. Thanks. Question. How can we support your work?
For those who want to support the women's movement, our shelters, our newspaper are absolutely supported by nobody. We're speaking about financial support, but for those who do not want to make it financial, there is a moral support, that political support that we need so much. We have written our platform. It's a booklet called Free Voice for Women. We have set forward our demands very clearly in there about what kind of constitution we need, which is a secular egalitarian constitution, and also about the immediate partial reform that needs to be done about the personal status law. For example, we have an article that encourages honor killing. Article 409 in the Criminal Code 111. Why is it still there? They had so many articles changing because of the political situation after this war. De-Ba'athification and all of those articles were put in place. How come an article that allows the killing of women has not been changed? For example, I'm just giving one example. Honor killing, disciplining a wife, and giving minor punishment to those who rape women, all of that needs change immediately, and we have put it in a booklet. We need support of women individuals, women's groups on our free Women's Voice booklet, and we think of the pressure as inside Iraq and outside Iraq, because believe it or not, our war was decided internationally, and we think the solution should not come only from the inside. There needs to be this international solidarity for our cause in Iraq. But for those of you who want to have a political stance as to what happens in Iraq, we feel that this occupation needs to end, but we need to get an egalitarian, secular, freedom-loving solution. We need a government that is non-ethnic, non-religious, and egalitarian. And for that, we have created what we call Iraq's Freedom Congress. The website is ifcongress.org, and if you go in there, you will know more about us. As for the women's work, it's equalityiniraq.com.
How did you feel about the media using Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and weapons of mass destruction to justify the invasion of Iraq?
I was jumping up and down, to tell you the truth. I was crying 20 times a day when those pretexts were being prepared and blown out of scale in the media to justify the war in Iraq, on Iraq. And we knew very well that in Iraq, the Wahhabis, who are the religious source of Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda movement, we knew that they had no existence in Iraq. We knew that the regime did not allow them to be in Iraq, not because the regime is very much freedom-loving, but it was not his kind of politics. And we knew that the weapons of mass destruction were not also there. And the only pretext that was left to be using now was the giving democracy to Iraq. And now we can see that if a woman cannot walk out in the streets, I don't think we are anything called democratic. So what we felt like when Osama bin Laden was used as a pretext to start this war, we had the feeling that the U.S. administration, the present one, is a far-right administration, and the people should have a say about these decisions, the preemptive strikes. They should not happen. They should not destroy the lives of millions somewhere else in the world. The people should be of more political influence on their government and to be more aware of what the consequences are on Iraqis, on Iranians, on Afghanis, wherever it starts. We felt very bad about the connection they did. And it turned out to be a lie, but nobody asks questions anymore. You know, winners do not get asked questions.
The women in the governing coalition, how do you relate to them?
You know, these elections that happened in Iraq, they are called free and honest elections, but there was this biggest cleric, Sistani, in Iraq, who was giving a fatwa that you have to give your vote to this Shiite list. And there's this other guy, Prime Minister Alawi, who was saying, if you give your vote to me, I will achieve security in Iraq. And he left that meeting with an ambulance so nobody would know where he is. Yeah, sure, you're giving us security. So let's speak about the quota, 25% that we were promised, that even in the States, women do not get the 25%. What more do you want in Iraq? All right, so out of these 25% women, we find out that more than half belong to Islamist parties. And when I say Islamist, let's differentiate it from Muslim. Islamist, it is when you impose your religion on the constitution and on the government. So one of those women was interviewed by one of the media. Her name is Jinan Al-Ubaidi, and she was asked, what do you think of domestic abuse? She said, I think we need to educate Iraqi women not to make their husbands angry, because when the husbands get angry, they will beat them up. And that is something that a woman should know better, not to be there. Can you imagine our constitution written by this woman? How it would write the articles about, the articles come later on from a civil law or a personal status law. But for us, it's a prerequisite, an egalitarian constitution. But when I sit with these women in many debates, they tell me, what are you talking about? Women are not equal to men because God said they are not equal. Why do you bring the debate to the table? So we find out that out of the 90 women who were elected into the parliament, none of them is a woman activist. I don't think many of them believe in women's freedoms, and I would say 95% of them would vote for an Islamic Sharia, not for an egalitarian constitution. How do we feel about that? We feel bad. I just have one last comment to make. In Iraq, because we speak about freedoms, and sometimes people tell us you're speaking out of context, and especially in the U.S., they try to put us where we belong ethnically and religiously. I was having this email, this correspondence with this woman, and when I told her that we want freedom, that we want egalitarian constitution, and that we should not be always represented by women who are covered up, that women in Iraq are not there, and they will not accept this reality, I was surprised that this woman who was answering my emails was understanding to all of this. She said, we want you women to come and voice your frustrations and tell us what you want. I would like to give a special thank you to this woman. She made it possible for me to come here and speak to you today. Thank you, Elise, very much for being that woman.